Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey! What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy, Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line you, bunch of dudes. Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude and Boston College 247, Season 2, Week 12. Dabo backwards is oh bad, which perfectly describes the Eagles' offense on Saturday night, as they fell to number 2 Clemson by a score of 27-7. The Tigers' D was even better than advertised, knocking 20 touchdowns out of the game 5 minutes in and swarming A.J. Dillon in the backfield all night. The Eagles dropped to 7-3 on the season, while Clemson clinches the divisional championship for the fourth consecutive year. On today's episode, we'll recap a hell of a game day week, talk dude or pood, and preview the Eagles' road trip to Tallahassee next weekend.
Matt, first and foremost, what a day Saturday was. Between the showing at game day, the tailgate, city side, and in the stadium, really, the atmosphere, especially at kickoff, it was just absolutely amazing. Probably the proudest I've been to be a BC football fan in some time, and I think we definitely need to start with that. As we'll get into a minute, the game left a weird taste in my mouth and, honestly, an awful lot to be desired, but we still are sitting in the top 25, two winnable games ahead of us. So overall, I think we need to take a step back and be thrilled with where we are today, while acknowledging the opportunity missed on Saturday night, as we'll get into in a second here.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Matt, it's been a while since BC was relevant this late in the year, really probably dating back to the Matt Ryan days, right? So we said it last week, but we were sort of playing with house money in this game. We kind of knew that coming in. It was a long shot. Clemson all season long has been on a different planet than the rest of college football, with the exception of Bama. And like you said, it was a great week, and it was a hell of a day on Saturday. And the boys obviously came up a little bit short, but tell you what, it wasn't for lack of trying. Those guys left their hearts out there, and obviously we caught the injury bug early on, which we never had a shot really after that. But I think we can all say we're proud of the effort those guys put forth. And it's going to be a fun ride the rest of the season and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to, I guess, get right into the game, it starts with the defense, obviously. We want to talk about gutsy performances and, performances that make you be proud to be a Boston College football fan, and can't look any farther than that unit when you're saying that. What these guys did, they took one of the most, if not the most, high-powered offense in college football, especially over the last month and a half, and didn't completely neutralize them, but that's not what you're supposed to do. They did what 99.9% of teams in the country cannot do, which is slow them down enough to give us a legitimate chance in the game, which they did all night. They did give up plenty of yards. There's no question about that, but only giving up 20 points to this Clemson offense is absolutely incredible. Bend don't break at its finest. Hamp threw in a pick for good measure at the end, but they were getting pressure on Lawrence for most of the night, prevented the huge plays. Again, I think overall, just one of the gutsiest performances, especially when factoring in the opponent, the pressure, the spotlight, all of it. One of the gutsiest performances I've ever seen from a Boston College unit.
Yeah, particularly in the first half, right? You go back to Clemson's past four games, and here were the scores at halftime the past four games. 28-0 first Wake, 24-0 NC State, 28-0 Florida State, 35-3 Louisville. So to say 13-7 at halftime, it's pretty damn impressive against these guys. The red zone D in particular early on, holding them to the two short field goals in the first half, really kept the Eagles in it. But it was pretty impressive. Like you said, they gave up a couple big plays here and there. Were able to lock down when you needed to. Zach Allen, goes without saying. We said it, pretty much every week at this point. But, he was the MVP. He was in the backfield all night. He must have had, you know, three or four pass deflections, including that awesome play where he batted the ball back down to Lawrence, who caught it, and then he got like the 20-yard sack. You talked about Hamp. And Clemson's receivers, you know, did a pretty good job getting separation, but I thought our scheme schematically, which is the same word twice there, Matt, it was perfectly planned by Jim Reed and Campanella, you know, and it helps when obviously you're getting the push off the line, which I thought Allen and Ray both did a great job. Carafa had another outstanding game shortly after, you know, going viral for looking like a school rock guy, which I'm sure all of you guys have seen. I think the entire world is seeing that at this point, Matt. But to hold the Tigers 5 of 15 on third down, pretty impressive against and really we're the only ones in the country outside of Clemson or sorry, outside of Syracuse, who was playing against, you know, the third string quarterback, right, who have really held Clemson to that type of offensive limitation. So can't say enough good things about the defense. They were on the field. You know, we punted 12 times in this game, right? The defense was on the field, you know, every 3 minutes. And these guys just left it all out there and what a performance defensively. If they keep that going the rest of the year, there's absolutely no reason. There's no doubt in my mind we'll go 10-3 if we keep having defensive showings like that.
Yeah, they did everything we could have possibly asked for and then some, honestly. You know, 20 points to this offense is absolutely unfathomable in the landscape of college football, really, that we've seen so far. And, you know, it's been really fun to watch over the course of the year because I think coming into the season, they were a unit as a whole that we felt very confident in, I'd say more so than the offense. But they had a slow start, you know, beyond the first two cupcake games. They obviously looked terrible at Purdue, and had some, you know, tough times in between. But really over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say it started really in the second half of NC State. It's just been a different unit. I don't know what has happened. And again, if it's a schematic change, like you so eloquently said, or whatever it might be, but what we're watching is just a lot of fun. It does feel a lot like the Don Brown defense with the pressure they were getting up front. So really a treat. And again, they did all we could ask for. They kept us in the game. And I think that's why I do have such a sour taste in, you know, how it all went down, because I think that we said coming in, it was house money. And, you know, at no point was this a game where, okay, if we lose, you know, it's season over, we're disappointed, whatever. But I think doing the unthinkable, really, and shutting down Clemson's offense to an extent, but just not really able to be able to put up a fight on the offensive side of it, feels like a missed opportunity, especially on national TV.
And I know you're saying that, and you're not, you know, trying to be a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but the people saying, you know, what a wasted opportunity by Coach Addazio with the defense playing as well as they did. I wish we had played like that against NC State, which I just completely disagree with. But we showed the entire country on Saturday night that our defense looked like they belonged out there with Clemson, yeah. which is pretty high praise.
Yeah, and I certainly don't think there's any, you know, I don't really put this on Addazio much at all. And I guess let's just talk right about the offense. The story is the injury, and it's kind of that cut and dry for me. First of all, if we just want to talk about injuries in a greater scheme, obviously A.J. Dillon is nowhere near 100%. I think we talked about it last episode, but even having him at, you know, 75% or just out on the field is, you know, a game changer in and of itself, because he is that good and defenses still need to pay attention to him. But that only works when we have, you know, without throwing E.J. Perry under the bus, when we have a capable quarterback under center to keep things balanced. A 75% A.J. Dillon going up against 10-man fronts, I mean, that's just never going to work. It doesn't matter who he's playing. So that was the number one story there. And, you know, the game changed completely when AB went down. It really is that simple. It sucked the air out of the stadium, which was so incredibly alive. Probably, honestly, one of the best atmospheres I've ever seen at Alumni Stadium. And, you know, it just felt like we had no chance. And again, not a knock on Perry. And we tweeted it during the game, but, you know, all of these message board heroes who have been calling for Perry all year. I mean, look, this is what you guys get. And again, it's not his fault. You can't get thrown into the best defense in the country on national TV and expect to light him up. You know, I think that's not fair for us to expect either. So
we should talk about
it's not really on him, but we just didn't have a chance once he came in the game.
We should talk about your tweet. I'm going to say your tweet because I don't disagree with it, or I don't agree with it at all. So basically, Matt sent a tweet from our shared account, which, you know, so we both stand by it. Basically,
hey, you have some ones in there that I could disagree with in the past if we want to get into that game. But yeah, keep going.
So basically, you said, you know, everyone that was saying, you know, bench AB, put EJ in there, right? You guys are all idiots. Dropped a couple F-bombs, which is great, Matt. It's a family show. I'm glad you did that. But I don't know what you were seeing. I didn't see a quarterback out there that was a heck of a lot different from the AB that we typically see. When you factor in he's a sophomore taking his first real snaps, he's playing against the best defense in the country. with the entire nation watching him. Frankly, I thought he had a couple plays that almost had, you know, really sparked this offense. There was a couple in particular. You know, he had that run on third down where he reached for the chains and, you know, just fighting through tackles. There was another one where he stood in the pocket for, you know, about 5 seconds, saw this giant man coming towards him, but stood in the pocket, knew he was going to get hit, and, you know, stayed in there, threw the ball, waited for his guys to get open, threw it, and then took an enormous hit. I'll tell you, he's a gamer, and I don't think he's, you know, certainly not the solution, right, long-term at quarterback, but I don't know that he's all that much different from what we've seen out of AB for most of the year. You know, we've seen flashes from AB, like versus Wake, and I guess he played pretty well against, what, Vatek, and Miami played pretty well too, right? But overall, I mean, we need AB to be kind of a game manager, and I think EJ can provide that. They were going to be one-dimensional either way. You know, you're going to have Clemson's front seven clogging the running lanes. And one of AB's issues that we've had in the losses, specifically Purdue and NC State as well, was, you know, when they sell out for the run and he can't make them pay. So to say that everything changed based on that one hit, well, I agree, it was, you know, certainly not ideal. I don't know that there was that big of a drop off from the AB that we usually see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not disagreeing with you that EJ Perry was put A, into an impossible position, and B, you know, gave it his all, and it was a gutsy performance to go against what, you know, honestly essentially amounts to an NFL defense. And he did make a couple plays, and you know, he did all I think he could have done. But having said that, I don't think there was any point, and correct me if you feel differently, but really once he came in and once we saw him through a couple possessions, at no point did I feel that he could lead a two-touchdown comeback. It really is that cut and dry for me.
Well,
and Anthony Brown has shown that he can do that. He has shown that he can hit explosive plays, and EJ Perry just can't do that. And maybe he is a game manager and his play is just going to be, you know, these 10-yard dink and dunks, but that's not going to get it done against Clemson, number one. And then number two, I think Clemson realized that, and that completely changed their defense to just say, okay, we're going to throw 12 guys at the box pretty much every play, and shut everything down on that side of things.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, but, and we do, you know, we probably lose what, half the playbook when Perry goes in there instead of Brown, just because he's not getting the reps in practice.
Right. And on that too, all the trick plays, right? We didn't see, I think we saw like one trick play, which is the Adazio staple against these better teams. And when AB's the only one who's been, you know, preparing for those and is comfortable with those, that's a huge loss right there in and of itself.
Yeah. And so the other thing too, and I don't mean to make this the EJ Perry show, because I didn't really think that was going to be my take coming into the game.
And you're a little biased too, by the way, same hometown.
No, not even. I mean, I was one of the first ones to say, you know, against the people that were saying we need a quarterback change, saying, you know, a kid from Northeastern Mass is not the solution. Trust me. I played in that league, soccer, but whatever, same thing. And but, you know, to his credit, he looked like a guy that has potential. He showed some flashes, and he left it all out there. And the other thing too is, you know, while Clemson's front four is what gets a ton of hype, they have a really good secondary too. And it wasn't like our guys.
They're phenomenal all the way around.
It wasn't like
our
guys were getting
that
great separation from a wide receiver standpoint. He didn't have open guys to throw to. They were getting in the backfield pretty quickly. I didn't think the line played that bad considering who they were up against. But I think the game plan was sort of to make these manageable throws and get the ball out of his hands quickly. A lot of people seemed to have issues with that. They wanted us to seemingly throw it deep every play. And we had a couple of those, right, where he dropped in a dime to Kobe White. That was awesome. But that's not going to work, and you're more likely to be turnover prone when you do that. I didn't have that much of an issue with the game plan, frankly. I think you kind of had to do that at that point, no matter who was in at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a different, I think, game plan regardless. But yes, at the end of the day, this is a virtually impossible task to go up against this Clemson defense. Again, where the frustration, I think, sets in is our defense did their job going against this amazing Clemson offense. So it kind of sucks when you don't get it from the other side of it. But I do want to talk about the hit from Wilkins that knocked AB out. I don't know if you were going to mention this in one of the segments. So
no, I'm sick of it, Matt. I'm sick of everyone talking about it, frankly. But go ahead.
I mean, so we're going to talk about it. So apologies. But look, this was a complete Bush League hit. I really do see it as a dirty hit. He had plenty of chances within that tackle to not throw his 300 and whatever pound body, Matt, on top of AB. That was a hit with the intent to injure, plain and simple. It's not a penalty, and it should not have been a penalty. It's not a penalty within the college football rules, but that was a dirty hit plain and simple.
It was a big hit, and that happens in football. And he
it's not a big hit when you after the guy has thrown it and you're tackling him, you make a point to roll your entire body on top of him.
I agree. That's
the hit that the NFL has outlawed, you know, really this year. But that's the extremely aggressive end of the spectrum that they've outlawed, not the, you know, Clay Matthews, what am I supposed to do here?
All right. So there's a line out there, and we're probably saying the same thing, just differently, right? It was a legal hit, right? That's a football hit that's legal in college football.
In college football, yes.
Was he trying to hit him as hard as he could? Yeah. And did he land on him? Yeah, but that's kind of football, Matt. So you can't really call it dirty. I mean, it's a legal hit. It sucks that he got hurt, right?
I think hitting with the intent to injure is a dirty hit.
Yeah, I know. But everyone's saying, you know, it was Wilkins was trying to do that. He was aiming for his spleen. I saw one commenter said, which is, if you can do that, you know, if he's that good of an athlete, then kudos to him. But I don't think he was aiming for his spleen, certainly. And I don't know. I really it's football. That stuff happens. And I'm sure they're going to look at it. And I'm sure it'll be a rule change, and we'll continue getting to where football is going to stop becoming football in the next 10 years. But I don't get on the train that everyone else is on saying that was a dirty hit. I don't even like Wilkins, and I want to call it a dirty hit, but I didn't think it was that bad.
This is, to me, no different than a guy, you know, pretty much diving at a running back's knees, you know, going helmet on the ACL.
Where do you want him to hit him? That's how you tackle.
But he didn't not need to make that tackle. He had thrown the ball away. You can shove him down. He didn't need to basically push him down and then in a separate motion, you know, belly flop on top of him. There was absolutely five times within the course of full speed, whatever you want to say, that he could have avoided the high contact and that hit. Again, no one's saying you can't hit AB or while he's throwing it, whatever. I mean, there was a lot of football in that play, but when he decided to basically completely jump off both feet and land on it with his full body weight intentionally.
AB was kind of in the act of jumping too, though, which also affected it, right?
I think, on the dirtiness scale, this to me has no difference than going low at a guy. Again, completely legal within the rules, but
I see it more as like a Clay Matthews type thing that they threw the flag for on the consecutive weeks on Clay Matthews, which were, you know,
But those were more bang bang, and he didn't really have an opportunity to avoid the hit. This was, he had multiple opportunities to not put his entire body weight on the quarterback, and he did it anyway. So, and if you look back at Wilkins, by the way, and you touched on it, I mean, the guy's a dirty player. He's the guy who was grabbing everyone's balls in the championship last year, or whatever it was. The guy's consistently been a dirty player, but he kind of, you know, hides it because he has this wacky personality of, oh, I'm going to play quarterback and he's really good, which, you know, I guess fools everyone else. But yeah, I'm a little heated by this, and it, you know, completely changed the game, obviously, potentially could change our year, though it doesn't sound like it, which is good news. But yeah, just pretty terrible all the way around.
Yeah. I do want to just go back to the defense real quick, because I looked up some X's and O talk, Matt, and I just want to sneak it in here. So we talked about kind of, you know, the front seven for BC doing a great job, right? I think one thing that they did, and I'm going to officially say Anthony Campanelli is the guy back there that's, you know, kind of calling out the adjustments and that type of stuff. But a big part of the Clemson's game plan, and we said this last episode in the preview, was the RPO, the run pass option. And it seemed like Reed and Campanelli really made it a point to make Lawrence run, their quarterback, you know, hold on to the ball and try to, you know, burn him with his feet rather than giving it to the running back. Etienne only had 11 carries, right? So I think that was a big part of stopping the run, was just not giving Etienne that name is so hard to say, man.
It's really, yep, it's impossible.
But they didn't let, and it's been kind of, you know, at least early on, or probably the first half of the season, right? These guys couldn't stop the run. So I think they made a point to say, all right, if Lawrence, you know, we're going to make Lawrence keep the ball, right, and try to beat us with his feet rather than having, you know, this you know, speedy, you know, running back try to beat us, right? It did burn us on that touchdown. I think it was the second or third touchdown of the game, right? But outside of that, I mean, they really kept the running game in check for most of the game. So I really like the trend that's, you know, if we can stop the run against anyone, then, you know, I trust our secondary to be able to kind of clean up the
run,
throw game.
Our run defense has been, you know, was the Achilles heel of this defense, if there was one, you know, early on in the year. I'm completely with you.
Yeah,
that has turned a corner 100%.
Yeah, silver lining of the game in my mind is just kind of knowing the defense is back to that elite level that we thought they would be from the jump. And Zach Allen again, man, just can't say enough good things about that guy. He is such an animal.
Yeah, he's basically solidified himself in the top, in the first round for sure, and, you know, continues to climb up that draft board. Yeah, I mean, again, like you said, there's so much good to take away from this game from what we saw in the defense, and coming into it, we did say it was house money and the day was awesome, and that's not going to take away from anything. For me, though, it is just leaving a bad taste in my mouth because of the opportunity we had that I think was unjustly taken away from us. And you know, look, it's football, injuries happen, whatever, but it's one of those games where I would just love to have had a shot at these guys when we were actually at our best. And we weren't without a healthy AB or AJ. So feels like a missed opportunity. Again, it's football. There's nothing really we can do about it. And look, if we look ahead, we're still ranked in the top 25, at least in the two polls, and the CFP will come out tomorrow night. We're recording on Monday here. But you know, you have to imagine we're going to be right in the 22 range there as well.
Yeah, and historically, these guys have kind of rewarded playing the good teams close. If you look across the board,
exactly.
The teams that have lost to Bama,
barely no one can hang down, with Clemson or Bama, right?
Exactly, right. So I wouldn't expect us to drop down that much, right? So I think 22, 23 range is probably where we'll end up. All right, with that, you guys have probably noticed we haven't talked about the 7 points that we scored. And Matt actually already claimed this guy is his dude of the week. So you can take it, Matt. But Mikey Walker, what a return. That kid is unbelievable, huh? Is that your dude of the week?
Yeah, so we'll just segue right into dude of the week here and get the segments underway. So Mike Walker, like you said, absolutely game-changing play. I'll say that was arguably the most exciting moment in alumni in at least a decade, though I think Tyler Murphy might have something to say about that. But, you know, that's
Matt,
a spark
can I
that
cut
we...
in? Can I cut in?
Yeah, please.
I'm going to go with the Tyler Murphy one. Only because, and this is kind of.
I am too, by the way. But yeah, I'm saying it's in the running.
Well, so mine's more of a pood, a personal pood, literally. Well, not actually, but I was in the bathroom. I don't know if you noticed that, but I missed the Mikey Walker punt return TD because Alumni Stadium is just not built to handle sold out crowds, apparently. And I was waiting in the bathroom line for a good 15 minutes. And you never know when Mikey's going to break one. And I timed that bathroom break wrong. So I'm going to go with the Tyler Murphy one, but I did see it on television afterwards. So that's great.
Yeah, I missed the Sherm Alston, the little guy touchdown against USC in the bathroom line as well. So definitely feel your pain on that. And yeah, there's definitely a trend. Alumni has a hard time at night games when people have been drinking all day and need to go to the bathroom frequently. But maybe more on that in a little bit. I don't know if you're going to mention that in your pood. But yeah, Mike Walker, again, absolutely incredible return. He's been electric all season. Is this his first return touchdown of the year?
Get this, Matt. We haven't had a punt return touchdown since 2012. Isn't that a wild stat? Yeah, I couldn't believe it either.
That shot. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's led the country in return yards pretty much last 2 years.
Can you think of the last time in 2012? Who was the guy that did it?
Was that, what about Amadon or Swiger or something like
that?
Oh,
you're close.
I mean, you give it to me.
I'll give you his first name, Spiffy.
I don't know if I was that close with Swagger or Amadon to Spiffy Evans, but I'll take it.
No, you said it. Mikey Walker, second straight year that he leads the nation in return yards when you combine kickoffs and punts. And outside of the fumbling issues, he's had a pretty near perfect season. And I keep thinking, I actually Googled it earlier today, is he going to get drafted? He almost should, right? He's so fast. I can't see him taking a big hit in the NFL because he's just so little, but... He will be on a practice squad. You know, he'll go undrafted and you know, he'll make a team somewhere, I bet. Probably the Patriots, right? So
everyone goes to the Patriots. But again, on the dude of the week note, Mikey Walker, but equally as important, I need to give a shout out to Mr. Walker, Mikey Walker's dad. So we ran into him as just about we were going to leave Cleveland Circle and head into the tailgate. Didn't know it was his dad. Just kind of started striking up a conversation with him. I believe we were waiting for Pino's at the time, if I am putting everything together properly.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds all right. Anyways, you know, he brings up, says, oh, you know, my son's number three. And obviously we go,
whatever. Which one? Because there's 14 number threes on the team.
Well, again, my mind obviously went to Mikey Walker first. So I, you know, said that's phenomenal, whatever. Started talking, gave him the dude alert koozie. You know, he talks about, you know, whenever Adazio goes to Naples, he gives him all the, you know, best Italian spots, whatever. Talked to him for 5 minutes, had a great conversation. Anyways, as he's walking out, he buys a whole round of drinks for our entire group, which was not an insignificant amount of people. So absolute MVP of the day pretty much for me was that move. We've been just by, you know, being on road trips or whatever it is, we run into a few parents of players this year and all of our interactions have just been absolutely incredible. So we talk all the time about these high character guys that, you know, BC recruits, and based on everything we've seen, it's not just the players, it's their entire family. So Mike Walker's dad and Mike Walker, a heck of a dude of the week combo for me. And Matt, I do want to make a note here. You know, I don't know how much we believe in karma on this show or whatever it is, but I think it's worth pointing out. Players are one for one on making a game-changing play, touchdown, whatever it is, after their parents bought us drinks before the tailgate. So just something to think about if there's any other Eagle parents out there. Again, not drawing any causation correlation, but just something to keep in mind.
And if you're the parent out there that wants that streak to end, then you know that's kind of on you. So
yep, exactly.
Good one, Matt. Hey, can I co-sign that one?
Absolutely.
That was just an absolute treat meeting Mr. Walker and Pinos. One of the best guys I've ever met in my whole life. And then just making it rain drink wise was great as well. I'll also give a shout out here to Desmond Howard for picking the Eagles against all odds. It was sort of the most foregone conclusion in the world that, you know, we weren't going to get any love from the College Game Day crew. And then out of nowhere, right? We had already left Game Day at that point. We went to City Side. We had to, we wanted to get to City Side early.
We beat the rush, yep.
Yeah, so we left before the guest picker got there and they started going through the predictions. But out of nowhere, we're watching at the bar. And Desmond Howard tells the country, you know, this BC team, I know what it's like to be a warm weather guy playing in cold weather. And Clemson's going to come out rusty and BC is going to shock the world. And I don't know, man, the City Side kind of went nuts. And you and I had believed all along that we, you know, had what it took to pull off the upset. But it was at that time when I was like, all right, someone who actually knows football. Actually knows, you know, thinks that
we're a little biased, so it's right. Nice to hear.
He thinks we can actually pull this thing off. So I think that was when people started to believe. Chris O'Donnell too picked us though, which was great. So overall, it was pretty good. Would have been great to get Corso as well, but we'll take it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'll keep it moving then on to my was that your dude of the week, Desmond Howard?
Yeah. Yeah, because you stole the Walker family from me.
I did. I'll keep it rolling to my dude here. So Boston College fans in general, I think I just need to give the shout out to the entire fan base. So the turnout in game day in bad weather was absolutely tremendous. It was mobbed from pretty much start to finish. Everyone in seats at kickoff, it helped the kickoff was at 8:15. But even when we got in a little before 8, it was absolutely packed. Team ran out in the field. The stadium was going insane. I've never seen it like that. I'm getting chills just thinking about it right now. It was loud all night. They never left, even when we were down late. It was just amazing from start to finish, really from, 8 a.m. to midnight. And to me, it proves something that I think we've known forever, but that we can be a big time football school. We just need a team like this to rally around. And, also we need the right guys at the helm to make it happen. So shout out to Martin, I think the 4-hour tailgating. And, I think he definitely lit a big, PR push to make sure we were all getting in seats by the kickoff, but just an amazing day on campus all the way around and watch game day back when I got home yesterday. But the intro there gave me chills with the Reese Davis talking about, Boston and the ACC revolution, everything like that. Just about a phenomenal performance. And I think it did wonders to get us back on the map after we've previously been a laughing stock in the college football world.
Yeah, agreed. It was awesome. We were there in 2009, right? We talked about that a little bit last episode, but showing up there Saturday morning, it was so packed. It was incredible. And everyone, everyone was saying kind of all week, what's game day doing going to BC? It's a professional sports town, all that, right? And so it was great that the students somewhat shut up that narrative for a little bit there. And just
I'd say completely
TV,
shut up that narrative there. I think during the game and during game day, there was nothing we could have done better there.
Yeah, agreed. And watching on TV too, it looked completely packed, which it was obviously. But having the buildings in the background was really cool. So agree with you there. Matt, I'm going to take a turn to negative town here. I'm going to go pood first, all right? So my pood is, and I don't really know what happened here. We left with a couple minutes to go, right? But I saw I watched the condensed version, whatever it is, right? And Dabo was kind of trying to run up the score in the last couple minutes. Did you see that?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
It's kind of weird. And we all, everyone in the country loves Dabo, and he says all the right things, and he's involved with every charity in the world, and, it does everything right. Even after the game, he was saying, hope Anthony Brown's okay, and, thoughts and prayers with him, whatever. But he just does weird things. Like, he was running up the score, trying to run up the score against us. He was having Trevor Lawrence still airing it out with, 10 seconds to go. I guess it's, I'm not a guy that ever says, I don't have an issue with blowouts, right? It's just kind of a weird move. No one else does that, right? When you've won the game,
it's a very weird move.
20,
yeah, it's a very weird move.
You don't do that, especially against, a team like us that we're a ranked opponent, and maybe that's what they're trying to do. They want to say, say they drop a game, right? Say they lose to Duke next week. They can say, hey, we beat Boston College by, 32 instead of 20, right. Whatever it was, or whatever the math is. 27 is way off. And that's why they beat, Wake Forest by 60 too. So Dabo just kind of, he doesn't have an issue, trying to make a scene here. I guess you have to do that again with the college football playoff and no one's safe, right, in college football. But I don't, and here's the other thing too, Matt. Did you know that they have this thing with orange pants where they only wear orange
pants
when they anticipate that they're going to be celebrating a championship mm-hmm. that night, and they wore the orange pants. So just very un-Dabo-like things, but it's sort of becoming a characteristic of Dabo, which is weird. On the outside, he's this great guy, but he has this weird, you know, sore winner mentality or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm gonna piggyback on yours for my pood. It's very much on the same plane, but the Clemson fans in general. So I think they always have this reputation of being this lovable, nice, the friendliest fan base in the ACC. All of our friends who have ever been down to a game down there have nothing but phenomenal things to say about their interactions. And I think we've really felt the same historically in their trips to Boston. But I heard multiple bad interactions, you know, over the course of Saturday and really even just being around them at Cityside and the stadium. These guys seem much more, I guess I'd say, arrogant, maybe obnoxious, hostile, et cetera, than normal. I'll caveat it with it was a long day, a night game. So I think everyone was, you know, probably a little liquored up and more aggressive, energetic than normal. But it's almost like now that they win and they're a really good program and Clemsoning is no longer a thing, the success has gone to their head and they're kind of dicks.
Or maybe what it is, Matt, is we're a legitimate opponent now where we haven't been in the past.
That's fair. Yeah.
And it's a serious game and that's what rivals do.
Maybe. Yeah. And we heard that from some of the folks down in Raleigh. They were saying, yeah, you know, they're not actually nice. It's just more like the bless your heart Southern. They're taking pity on you. But really, that's their way to kind of be assholes. So you absolutely could be right. And it could be more that we're a legitimate opponent. But yeah, in general, just a really sour taste of Clemson this week between their fans, between Dabo, like you said, between the Wilkins hit. It's weird to say because they were always a team that I think I, you know, enjoyed pulling for
playoff. Our favorite opponent, right? That they always have been.
Right. And again, in the college football playoff, they were always the one to carry the ACC mantle. Again, Dabo is always likable, whatever. Something has really changed for me in the last, you know, 3 days, but clearly there's been a paradigm shift for a while here, and I am fully out on Clemson the rest of the way.
Wow.
I'll be rooting hard for them, or rooting hard against them, despite it hurting the ACC in general if them falling out. Yeah,
no,
I'm fully done with them.
Wow. Because the Wilkins
I really want to serve it to their fans. I don't want them to have happiness. I'll say, you know what I'll say? Fine. I want them to go to the college football playoff because if they fall out of that, it will hurt BC's bowl hierarchy. But I want them to get absolutely embarrassed by anybody as long as it's not Notre Dame.
Wow. All right.
Strong feelings.
Yeah, that seems like a stretch to me, Matt. But I'll tell you what, I guess.
Matt, I'm a passionate guy. If there's one thing about me, I'm a passionate guy when it comes to hating fan bases.
I guess so. And what does them winning the national championship really do for us anyway?
Zero.
Not that much, right? I'm with
zero.
You. All right, Matt, let's talk in a sport where we're actually going to win a championship this year. How's that? Since we are officially mathematically eliminated football-wise. BC basketball is officially 2-0 on the year. That's my dude, Matt.
I love it. We're back.
See how positive I'm being?
Yeah, that's surprising after the first two starts,
Matt,
but I'll take
here's
it.
Here's the bad news. So obviously they played Milwaukee, which I don't know who was in charge of the scheduling, but it's still way too soon to be playing UW-Milwaukee. I'm sure most of our listeners were around for the, was it 05? Maybe 06? I don't know. All those years are kind of all the same. But we were a 4 seed, I believe. It was the Craig Smith team. We got upset by them in the first round of the tourney.
Sports Illustrated picked us to win it all that year, I believe.
That rings a bell. So and Craig Smith was on the cover, and that's what you get. And they had this guy named Ed McCants. I think that's his name, but it might not be. I don't know. And also Bruce Pearl coaching. So how about that? But anyway, we're getting off topic here. So they nearly lost that game against Milwaukee. And then they almost lost to St. Francis as well. The same St. Francis of Brooklyn who, get this, Matt, our 2015 team, which you'll remember, went winless in the ACC. They beat St. Francis of Brooklyn by 26, and our team beat them by 5. So if we're doing transitive property, that's not great. My official take on the year is we need more than Kai Bowman. He's the only one that showed up thus far. We had 0 bench points against St. Francis.
I disagree. Tabs has shown
Tabs
up.
Tabs has been fine. That's right. But you need a big man, and it's Stephon Mitchell can't be your best big man. You need an offensive scoring threat. Especially when you get into conference play, but 0 bench points, your boy Jairus Hamilton, it's still way too early to sound the alarms.
Yeah, but jury's out on him, right?
He's
right.
Done absolutely nothing through 2 games. We're not,
and he'll be fine. He's a freshman. He's going to be absolutely
fine.
I'm no concern about
him. That doesn't
him.
Work anymore because everyone's a freshman in the NCAA, right? If he's not showing up against St. Francis, is he going to show up against UNC and Duke? I don't know, but we're not guarding 3 as well. They can't hit 3s and they got to wake up. So that's my dude. We're 2-0, but by the skin of our teeth there, Matt.
Yeah, you want to talk about Sunday scaries. How about being on the Amtrak back to New York after the loss we had Saturday night and refreshing, you know, ESPN Gamecast every 10 seconds and seeing us basically go 1 point up, 1 point down, 1 point up, 1 point down with St. Francis of Brooklyn. So thank God for my own mental state that we somehow found a way to pull that out, and hopefully good things to come the rest of the way.
Yeah, that is my literal nightmare there, Matt. All right, next segment we have Eagles in the Wild. So Matt, you actually called, if we go back to last week's Eagles in the Wild, you predicted Chris O'Donnell. And
credit to me.
Good. So huge call there. And Chris O'Donnell seems like a great guy. And, you know, I'm sure people like NCIS or whatever show he's on. I don't think he was their first choice, Matt, but I don't know. He picked BC. He was great. I did see a funny tweet. Someone asked, was Brendan Fraser not available? Which is funny, commenting on Chris O'Donnell has been relevant since the mid 90s or whatever. But hey, great guy. And good call there.
Yeah, good call by me. And by the way, worth noting a couple things here. So one, I think we reported this last week on Twitter, but if not, Mookie Betts was basically all the way locked in to be the guest picker. And then he had a baby on, or his girlfriend had a baby on, I think, Thursday of last week. So congrats to him. He's obviously had a great year with being the best player in the history of the world and now having a baby. So that takes the sting out of it a little bit. And then Chris O'Donnell apparently basically asked ESPN to be on it. But credit to him. He had a phenomenal tailgate look, and it was like the most BC look of all time. But basically the maroon sweater over the button down with the Patagonia vest and the forward BC hat. That's basically how I'm going to dress on every Saturday once I hit 30.
Yeah, he looks like the typical BC dad.
Yep, exactly. So credit where it's due there.
All right, that's not my Eagles in the Wild. My Eagles in the Wild. Tell you what, Matt. The guys at Pino's, I know they're not, you know, BC alum, at least I don't think they are, but that staff has not changed in 20 years. It was great getting back to Pino's. The pizza is absolutely electric, as always. It's the best pizza in the history of the United States and beyond. Although we did bring in an outside source, and he tried Pino's. I think it was too hot. I don't know what the issue was, but he didn't love it. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The pizza was awesome. The only qualm, I guess, was that no one told them it was game day. And so they ran out of slices around.
Yeah, I got a couple qualms, but yeah.
You got more than one. So they had zero slices. We walked in there with a crew of like 20 people around 3:30, you know, just to grab some slices before we hit Brighton. And they had nothing. They had some chicken bacon ranch, which is not, you know, necessarily my favorite pizza. So that was not great. But otherwise, they're as good as it gets at Pino's. So honorary Eagles in the Wild. I know it's a stretch here, but that's what I'm going with.
That's not bad. All right. Well, just really quickly, my qualms. So there was one slice of pepper. I was the first to order. They had one slice of pepperoni left. I ordered it. I'm a cheese guy normally, but it was way greasier than I remember. So I was down on that. And then I also got a slice of their Sicilian just to kind of get the other side of things.
You don't want to get Sicilian. That's not what.
Look,
I
didn't have a choice because they were out of everything. It was maybe, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it was maybe the worst pizza I've ever had in my entire life. Don't ever get the Sicilian at Pino's. Get their cheese and get their pep. And that's it. But again, I'm with you. Great guys. Just horrendous. They're not from Sicily, I guess. They're from the other part of Italy.
Well, yeah, but no one likes Sicilian pizza. I mean, you made that bet by ordering that.
Yeah, some Sicilian pizza is good,
but
not at Pino's.
I'm not going to do the Sicilian chicken bacon ranch. Let's fire up a whole pie of cheese. That's what you should have done.
Anyways, my Eagles in the Wild. I know I've been harping on this, the BC fans, for, you know, most of the episode, but need to give a major kudos to everyone on the train up from NYC on Friday night. This was such a cool and unique moment. But pretty much in Penn Station at the 5:30 train on Friday, it was just loaded with maroon and gold, loaded with BC gear. And then on the train, it was pretty much every other set of seats was a group of like 8 BC fans, all, you know, crushing Bud Lights for the 4 hours, big time party train atmosphere. Everyone was loud. Going up and back to the cafe cart, you were running into old acquaintances or people from class or whatever it is. So it was a really cool moment. And again, it proves to me the thing that I've continued to harp on this episode, but you know, this is a real fan base and this can be a real football school. Everyone else besides, I guess, the people like us, but the majority just need something to rally around, and a program like this and an AD like we have and a coach like we have and the players like we have is really just a perfect excuse to get everyone fully on board.
Wait, so you were on an Amtrak on Friday night? I don't think you had made that clear on Twitter at any point. On Friday night that you were on a train and that there were beers being served. So
Matt, it was a party train. I didn't have a choice.
Breaking news there, Matt.
I didn't have a choice.
I almost changed the password on you on Friday night, frankly, Matt. Okay. But anyway.
Again, if we want to do this game of attrition and go back through some of your former Fourth and Dude tweets here, be my guest.
Well, Well, that's my other, actually, it brings up a good point. How does the School of Rock tweet go viral, but not the Trevor Lawrence Disturbia one? That's another poo this week.
Twitter doesn't make any sense. There's no rational people pulling the strings at the Twitter universe.
Disturbia is like a heck of a movie. I mean, if you guys haven't seen Disturbia, stop what you're doing right now and go see it. Shia LaBeouf at his best, on house arrest, and you know there's a murder across the street, the whole nine. So, all right. Anyway, Matt, let's get into Dutius Corpus. And court is officially in session.
You start here. I didn't bring any games into the courtroom this week. I want to be just a member of the jury. I want you to present me cases.
Now, what if
I'll
had
my thoughts
on the same thing? Then we wouldn't have a segment here. Fortunately, I do. I'm going to start. I'm going to mix it up this week. Let's talk Syracuse. No, let's not talk Syracuse yet. Let's talk NC State. So NC State obviously was the Thursday night game last week, and they went down to Wake Forest. And you kind of knew, and we called it the third episode right after we played Wake, that we thought Wake Forest was a pretty good football team, and they were just waiting for their spot, and they finally got the upset against NC State.
Did you see? Look, they play well on Thursday nights.
They do. Everyone knows
that. It's that simple.
It was a hell of a game. They had no business winning it, but they drove down the field, and NC State just stopped playing defense, and it calls into question everything we know about college football, specifically who is the second best team in the ACC right now. It's kind of a hung jury at this point, Matt.
I would agree with you that it's a hung jury. I mean, Syracuse would be the winner on paper. But again, I think if we play Syracuse, at least if Anthony Brown is healthy, if we play Syracuse tomorrow, I think we're favored in that game.
I listen, I'm with you. So, but you think about Syracuse, who they've lost to, and I'm glad you segued into Syracuse. You know,
I knew you weren't going to bring them up, so I had to give it to you.
So they lost to Clemson, and then they lost in overtime to Pitt, right? Who's now like the best, the best coastal team. How wild is it that it's real life right now? It's 2018, and based on what we saw last year, Syracuse and Pitt were the two worst teams in the country almost, and they're respectively. Pitt's likely going to win the coastal now, and Cuse has a legitimate shot to be second in the ACC. But I think you're right. I think, and we'll talk about Cuse, Notre Dame, right? I know you're a Notre Dame fan secretly, but let's just get into it.
That's erroneous. I'm going to throw that out of the court, by the way. Objection. I'm objecting. That's an objection.
Matt, can I just speak one time? Matt, I've been calling this game. I've had this circled on my calendar. Syracuse, Notre Dame. I think I've had it circled since like week one, pretty much. But you have Notre Dame's QB, Ian Book, which is kind of a dumb name in my opinion. He's banged up. Cuse puts up a billion points every single week. I don't think they've scored less than 50 in like months. And we've said all year this Notre Dame squad is not the real deal, and they're due for an upset. So between all those factors, Matt, I got Cuse pulling off an upset. I don't even think it's going to be close. I think Dungy's going to absolutely turn it on. He's got to be a senior by now, right?
He might still have like 50 years left. Who knows?
Cuse, they just – I don't know. You lose track of time at Cuse apparently. But he's got to be close to his senior year. And if he's getting close to one of his last games in an Orangeman uniform, those guys love Dungy. As much as we used to hate Dungy, and I don't hate him anymore because he's just so electric, he's gonna play his A game in Yankee Stadium. So you heard it here first.
Is he a New York guy? Is he a New York guy?
I don't know where he's from, Matt. I have no idea.
Okay.
I wish.
Because that's always a factor here. If you got a guy playing in his like hometown baseball team stadium, that's
– He kind of feels like a New York guy.
I completely agree.
Upstate New York somewhere, right? So you heard it here first. That's my official lock. Don't just bet Cuse with the points. I think it's 9.5. Take the money line, Cuse.
Well, I actually like that. I think so the crowd, obviously Notre Dame travels well everywhere, and it'll be like when they played at Fenway where it's their home game, so they're going to get the lion's share of the tickets. But, I mean, Cuse is huge in New York City. I think that doesn't even need saying. They're going to show up very well now that they have a team to rally around. I could see that feeling like a very even crowd, if not even a slight edge to Cuse, wouldn't shock me. So I'm with you. I think that would be awesome to watch, and it would be good for it would be good for us, honestly, because it would make the game in 2 weeks even more exciting. Cuse would be in the top 10 at that point, would have a lot on the line, wouldn't quite be a full, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Yeah, I'm Googling where Dungy's from. He's actually from Oregon, breaking news okay. There.
So if they play in the Mariners Stadium, maybe there'll be a little kick there.
Right.
This will be revenge is the word I was looking for. Thank you. A potential little revenge for the whole Diamond Ferry thing a couple years ago. Obviously, they're not having a chance to go to the ACC championship, but a top 10 Syracuse team coming into BC in the last week of the year, maybe we could avenge some of those demons.
Yeah, agreed. Matt, that's really all I had for Dutius Corpus. I do just want to say Pitt's uniforms are electric, and when they're playing well, they're actually pretty cool to watch play in those unis. I remember watching them last year, it was kind of like the only good thing they had going was how great their uniforms were.
Their throwbacks or their regular ones? Their throwbacks are nice.
Whatever color that is, like the powder blue and then the gold, it's awesome. You got to see it. But anyway, I think we're probably running out of show here. So let's exit the courtroom unless there's anything else you wanted to say there, Matt.
No, that's it.
All right, court adjourned. Let's talk Florida State.
Yeah, so I'll start with my fun facts here. I'm going to stick on the Seminole Tribe for my fun facts. This is actually, I like this one a lot. The Seminole Tribe paved the way for Native American gambling as we know it today. So Mohegan Sun, Foxwoods, et cetera, all over the country, the Indian reservations are where, you know, the gambling happens. So they started it with high stakes bingo on their reservations back in 1979. That led to a bunch of, speaking of duties corpus, a bunch of court cases where basically, you know, U.S. versus the Seminole Tribe of gambling, is this legal on your reservations, whatever, whatever. They won all of those and pretty much opened the doors for all of these other tribes to have legal gambling on their reservations. So there is no Mohegan Sun, there is no Foxwoods without the Seminoles and high stakes bingo.
Yeah, that's really, I never knew the origins of that. It's kind of just one of those things that's always been a thing. So that's fascinating. Glad you brought that up. Did you know that Florida State has a haunted fountain on campus? And many students report hearing strange noises late at night. It's called the Westcott Fountain. Did you know, Matt, in that same fountain, they also dunk people? It's tradition on your 21st birthday. They dunk you in the fountain. So
I don't like messing with haunted stuff. I would not want to dunk in that.
And then also Jameis Winston stole a bunch of crab legs at one time.
People don't talk about that enough anymore. I'm with you. All right. So this could be a little contentious or interesting, I guess I'll say it best. But again, because we played Florida State last year, we're not doing the top five notable alumni. We are going to do the top five notable Seminoles. Let's hope that we keep this above board, Matt. But
yeah, sure, Matt, I'll go first. That sounds like a good segue to me here. my first Seminole here is going to be Chief Billy Bowlegs. He was a Seminole chief in the 1800s. Which feels a little late to be a Native American chief, frankly, in my opinion, Matt. The 1800s is like 100 years ago. Per Wikipedia, did you know this, Matt? Billy Bowlegs loosely translates to alligator chief.
Nice. Okay. I would have thought it was because he like walked funny.
Yeah. I mean, check out the Wikipedia. That's literally what it said. So I don't necessarily know how that translation works either, but I didn't make it up.
Well, you can't talk Seminoles without Billy Bowlegs, so I am glad you brought him up. The other big name on the Seminole tribe is Osceola. So he's not a chief, which is a common misconception. I think a lot of people think Chief Osceola.
I did think he was a chief, yeah.
Right, exactly. So you're the common misconception there, but he was a great leader. I would argue the most famous Seminole of all time. Phenomenal warrior. He was captured under a flag of truce, but refused to sign a treaty to give up his people's land. So he was arrested and died a year in prison later, which is, again, I think, obviously a pretty bad job by whoever was responsible there. So he became a huge symbol of freedom, rightly so, and is now the name of the main FSU mascot, the guy that rides in on the horse. Horse is named Renegade. That's actually really cool, and I hate Florida State, and I hate so much of what they, you know, their fans and everything. But the guy riding in on the horse and stabbing the field with the spear on fire is an absolute 10 out of 10 college tradition. So I'm going to move on to my third overall pick here. So the Hard Rock Cafe. So the Seminole Tribe recently purchased the name, the Hard Rock Cafe, and the entire brand. And then they've since then opened and rebranded a bunch of casinos under that name. So the Hard Rock Cafe and everything that comes with it is owned by the Seminole Tribe.
Matt, how about some current events there? That's a good segue into mine as well. I'm going to talk current events. We just had the election in the foil here, Matt. I'm going to go with Elizabeth Warren, who is Harvard Law's first professor of color and a current senator of Massachusetts. Great Seminole there. And then Seminole, Oklahoma is a town in Oklahoma, obviously, has a population of about 5,000, which is a small town, but it has several notable alumni or people that grew up there, including the current president of the University of Oklahoma, as well as the founder or co-founder of the Sonic drive-in restaurants.
Oh, Sonic, I think, is underrated. I'll just say that.
I don't know that I've ever been to one, but I
been to one.
Actually, let's cut that out. I'm just going to say, yeah, Sonic is great, because I think people are going to freak out if they find out that I haven't been to Sonic.
You're the South Carolina guy. That's not very
on-brand. Yeah, I know. It's exactly.
All right. So with my last pick, I'm going to go with the famous ship named Seminole. So she was one of the only two Clipper ships in the post-Civil War period to make a passage from an Atlantic port to San Francisco in less than 100 days. The Seminole arrived at San Fran from New York on March 10th, 1866, just a short 96 days after leaving New York, and was carrying a locomotive on the ship the whole time. So everyone knows I'm a big transportation guy. I love trains, as we talked about earlier. I also love ships. So this one got me really excited. And again, anytime you can, you know, get from New York to San Fran in less than 100 days, you got to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Pretty good list there, I'll tell you what. I did have one honorable mention here, Matt, and I'm going to go with Seabass, Sebastian Janikowski. I know we like to stay away from athletes and all that, but just got to give him a shout out. One thing I learned about Sebastian.
Matt, I think he's Polish.
Matt, so that's exactly what I was going to say. Did you know that he was like a stud Polish soccer player growing up, and he was well on his way to like making the national team before he moved to America in soccer? Did you know that?
I mean, I guess it makes sense. He's got a strong leg.
Yeah, the Polish thing and the soccer national team, that's pretty cool. So, and also everyone knows that in college he used to be famous for kicking doing the kickoffs through the uprights, and they used to set up like the field goal graphics on the kickoffs at Florida State. So he was just kind of a legend there.
Got it. Okay. So just he's Polish, not a Seminole tribe member, but okay.
No, but he went to Florida State. He's a Seminole.
Yeah. No, but you didn't really follow the rules there because we did alumni last year.
You literally say there's no rules.
Let's move to travelability ratings. Again, this is out of 30 RVs, residential vehicles. So I'll go with mine first. So this is a 330 kick, which is, as we know, huge for the RV ratings. That's just a phenomenal time for a football game. Gorgeous day for football down in Tallahassee, mid-60s and sunny. Not really the Boston weather we'd like in November, but you know, Florida State is not good enough, as we'll get into right now, to really worry about, you know, their offense clicking at that speed. They stink, so the crowd will be out of it, and it probably won't be a great atmosphere on campus. But the positive to that is that it is a very winnable game, and when we go on the road to watch BC, we obviously want to see a winnable game. A lot of the buzz is gone from us after the last weekend because we could have been top 10 right now, but we are still top 25, and there's still a lot to be excited about and a lot to play for. Tallahassee is a city, which always helps because there's stuff to do outside of just the tailgate, like if you went to some college in the middle of nowhere. So I'm going to go. It's a fine score, 19.3. I think it's tough to really get excited to travel after all of the energy that went into last weekend and these, letdown, I guess, at the end of the night.
What is the weather going to be, Matt?
Matt, I told you, it's a gorgeous day for football. It's a gorgeous day for football in Tallahassee. It's the mid-60s and sunny. Just absolutely perfect.
Sometimes I tune the weather part out, so I just want to make sure you covered it.
I got you.
You hit the big ones. We're officially obviously no longer in postseason contention. There's really nothing riding on this game. It would be kind of nice, and we'll talk about it, but FSU has a 37 bowl win game streak or bowl appearance streak,
yep.
I should say,
yep.
Riding on this win as well as their they play the Gators, I think, after us. So they got to win both of those. Tallahassee as a whole just kind of sucks, or really more the fans than anything just kind of suck. You have like a 50-50 shot of getting into a fight with an opposing fan down there. You mentioned the 3:30 kickoff. You know, it's one of the few things you and I agree on. That's the correct time to play a football game. And I'll tell you, after the freezing tailgate this past weekend, Matt, the 60-degree weather doesn't sound that bad. So that overall, it sounds like a good road trip. It is just one that I don't see on my calendar, not this year, probably not any year unless it's a huge game. It's just there's so many other better places to go, in my opinion, than Tallahassee. Apologies to any Seminoles fans listening. I have 13.4, which I know is low, but, no postseason contentions, just kind of sucks. There's really not all that much riding on this game. So for all those reasons, 13.4 is my official RV rating there.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like if you gave me free flights and a free hotel and free tickets to the game, I still would not be excited to make that trip if you told me I had to take off Friday morning after the energy that we spent last weekend.
Yeah, the players left it all on the field. So did we, Matt. I'll tell you what.
Right. People don't talk about that enough. Credit to us. So I'm excited to just, get back and wake up in my own bed and watch game day here and then saunter over to Dewey's and, enjoy an afternoon in the city. So yeah, I'm with you. Not a great score. Let's move into the preview. Matt, mine's going to be really quick and we're running out of show here, so that actually works out well. But look, FSU stinks. That's my preview. They have a horrible O-line. Our defense should absolutely feast on them all night long. So they really shouldn't be able to score much regardless of what we do at offense and whether it's AB or EJ. Again, the word just to reiterate that came out today is that AB should be fine. It's day-to-day. But Even, you know, with Perry in, I think we'd be okay. It would be less exciting and probably a little bit more nerve-wracking, but again, Brown's going to practice on Wednesday. I don't know if we covered that earlier in the episode, so just good to get our injury plugs in there. But the only thing that slightly concerns me here is two things. One, Florida State has been getting slightly better over the course of the year as they've gelled a little bit, but a lot of their players have quit, I think, in general. And then many of them might have a chip on their shoulder after last year's beatdown. But like I said, most of the team has just given up over the previous weeks. I really don't think they're going to harken back to big loss last year when they had already checked out as well. So for all of those reasons, I really don't even see this being much of a game. But my, I guess, big thing to watch for is the health of AB and making sure that we can get back on track for what will be a huge game 2 weeks from now. But don't look ahead because you got to take care of business ahead of you.
Yeah, and we know what it's like to play a Florida State team that sort of already quit on the year. And like we said, they're coming into this game 4-6, and they're not a good football team. Their only wins are Samford, Northern Illinois, horrible Louisville team, and then they snuck by Wake, right? There are a couple things that could make it interesting. I talked about the 37-year bowl streak that I couldn't believe was still intact after their showing last year, but apparently they did sneak into a bowl.
Yeah, they rescheduled like some, I think it was like UL Lafayette or something, okay, in like so week 14 to sneak in. Yeah, right.
Got it. Okay. But that said, Taggart might be a good coach. Jerry's, I guess, still out on him. But he's desperate for a statement win, and that's what we are this year. We're ranked, obviously. I think if they're going to show up for one game, it could be this one. Did you know they're actually breaking out new jerseys for this one? They're doing black jerseys with the Garnett pants, which seems like odd timing for kind of a lost season here. But with that all said, I think you're right. It's a new regime from last year. I don't think they're going to really care that much about, you know, getting blown out by us last year. Like you said, I think they've quit. Talking about the Eagles, in our last five games following a loss, Matt, the Eagles have averaged 44.5 points per game. I'm going to have to double check. That seems like a lot of points, but that's a real stat that I looked up. Florida State gave up 365 rushing yards to Notre Dame last week. I just think this offense has a real opportunity to get back on track here. If Brown can't go, do we run the Wildcat with Jeff Smith? We know these guys can't.
We talked about that. We were talking about that in the stadium on Saturday night. I would have been okay with it at a certain point because we, again, weren't getting anything.
But I sent a tweet kind of joking against when AB didn't show up against Vatek in the first half. Like,
yeah,
we know that can work. We know we got a good running game. We throw Jeff Smith back there. He's a threat to throw, and you know, you see what happens, right? But like you said, you know, their offensive line is absolutely horrible. They gave up 5 sacks and 10 tackles for a loss against NC State, which we're better than defensively. Sack brothers should have a huge day, and that's really my analysis. It should be an easy win for the boys, and you know, we'll get the momentum back from last week, and we'll go into Syracuse, you know, with a big W. I'll give you my official prediction here. Eagles 42, Seminoles 14.
Yeah, and I'm right on the same page there, too. Again, it's all about getting back to basics. Look, last week was a, like we've said many times now, kind of a house money game. We lost. That's okay. We got to move on. We still have a very great opportunity here to get to 10 wins overall with the bowl. So get back to basics. Let's get everyone healthy. Let's play our game. We're a bigger, better, more physical team than Florida State. Let's take it to them. Let's not try to do anything crazy or out of the element here to, you know, go too conservative or whatever it might be. And let's get back in the win column comfortably. I'm going 35-13, so pretty much right on the same wavelength as you. But yeah, this one should not be scary at all.
And we should
the main thing to watch for is AB's health. That's kind of it for me.
And we should be able to do it. You know, if AB is not close to 100%, let's sit him, right? Let's sit him for Syracuse or even wait till the ball. I don't care. Perry and even Levy, right? If Dylan's not 100%. You know, maybe don't force him in there either. It's Florida State.
I agree best with you case, on Dylan. I don't think I agree on the QB position, but I agree on Dylan.
Well, best case, what? I mean, I'm not saying it kind of sucks, but you know, we're out of postseason contention. But I'm not saying the whole season's lost. But there's no sense in sacrificing the future of these guys. You know, we should have a big year next year, right? You don't want to make an injury. And Brown's, you know, it's probably a bruised rib, right? At this point, he's day to day. I'm well connected to the medical industry here. So that's my official take, MD. But seriously, you know, you don't want to force him back and lose him and, you know, damage it worse. And especially with Dylan, you know, that's an ankle thing that's going to be hanging around forever. We should be able to do it with Levy and Bailey, but don't force them back in there if they're not ready.
Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. But yeah, I think that wraps up another great week here. Should be a good Saturday. Get back in the win column. So thanks again for listening. Certainly was a phenomenal day on Saturday and an overall deflating end, but all we can do now is look ahead. We have win number 8 on the horizon and a couple of huge ones left to go. As always, follow us on Twitter and Insta at Fourth and Dude, and follow our friends at BC247 at Eagle Insiders. I'm sure they'll hopefully give any updates to the AB side of things, but they're always giving you some great BC news really throughout the week. Certainly had a phenomenal week leading up to game day, and expect more of the same throughout the rest of the year. Matt, the road to Charlotte and the road to Santa Clara is officially dead, which honestly really sucks to say, but look, the road to 10-3 is still full speed ahead for the Birds. All we can do now is go out there and take the opportunities in front of us.
It's always a great day to be a dude.
Find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.